Grace, greetings, and welcome to the DDP for the 25th of November. I'm Paul White. We're in 1 Corinthians 13, and we are actually, we're starting the work today, breaking down these descriptions of love. I gave you a little bit of homework if you accepted the challenge to go search for our sermon, God is Love and Love Is, and watch the breakdown of some of the things that God must be due to the fact that He is love. He is love. What is love? Well, you could get in a circle there and just say, like a feedback loop, God is love, love is God, God is love is God. That doesn't really help. Well, it doesn't help with 1 Corinthians 13. Paul doesn't do that. It also doesn't really help to describe what love is just to say that it's God, because you could have a pretty bad outlook of God, and that by default would mess up your outlook of love. So let's start over. And let's start by understanding that if 1 John 4:8 is correct, that God is love, then what we need to do is begin to understand what love actually looks like. And in doing that, we would start to get a glimpse of what God is like. With all of that said, that's not Paul's point. Paul's point is not, hey, I want to show you what God looks like, though that works, because using John's letter, we can do that. Paul's point, and this is something we'll circle back to over and over as we proceed through these descriptions of love, his point is this is the more excellent way to live. You can focus your life on gifts, but what you should be focused on is how to be perfected in love, how to walk love out on the earth. That would be the more excellent way to live, and that if you got to where you could walk love out, you would find that some of these other gifts that you're so desirous of and so in need of would fall in importance. That's the whole point here. It's not that they're not important or won't be important, and it's not that we have to argue that they've ceased to exist, but they will become less relevant in our walk as love is elevated to the place that it should be in our walk. So let's begin that work. Let's just start from the top. Let it lead us into the descriptions of love. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I'm become a sounding brass or a clinking cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy, the phrase "the gift of" is actually a later addition. Paul says, though I have prophecy, and again, I point this out only because, as we've said earlier, I think we call these things the gifts of the Spirit, but really Paul called them gifts, ministries, and activities. So though I have prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but I have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor is an addition, though I bestow all my goods to feed, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. There's actually an early Greek translation that uses the phrase, though I give my body so that I may boast. And I don't know exactly which is the earliest, but I think that's an interesting addendum to that, because that's the spirit behind giving your body to be burned. It's this idea that you could be so self-sacrificial that you would give up your own life, and yet if you gave it up because you wanted people to notice how sacrificial you were and not how much you loved, it profits you nothing. That's an interesting thing. Because you would think all you would care about is profiting your neighbor if it's love. Love, when done properly, will even profit you. It will even profit the person who loves, because as you give love out, you profit in your spirit the warmth, the joy, the acceptance, and love is reciprocal. We sort of can't help but love in return someone who loves us. So as we give of ourselves in a manner that is not selfish, we do receive a profit from love, and it's okay, according to this text, to receive a profit from love. So verse 4 is where the breakdown begins. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Love is not puffed up, or the Greek word is better translated, love is not arrogant. Now, how I think it's probably best to do this as we work through these is not just descriptions of what these mean, because you're intelligent enough to know that what kindness is. You're intelligent enough to know what envy is and arrogance is. You don't need me to give you some platitude and principle about arrogance. Rather than do that, consider the homework. God is love, therefore God is A. God is B. God is C. Let's try that. God is love, therefore, since love suffers long and is kind, God suffers long and is kind. That's how I like to look at that, because that gives me an understanding, A, of who God is, and if my framework of God is correct, and it's lined up with the man Jesus, then my understanding of love will filter through what I see from God. So here's an example. Love suffers long and is kind. Therefore, God, who is love, by default, is long-suffering and kind. I see that in Jesus. Patient and kind. Because of Jesus, I find that in God in the Old Testament. That's God being patient with Israel. God being patient with Moses. God being kind. Moses saying, show me your glory. And God says, hide here in the cleft of the rock. I'll walk past and I will show you my goodness. And part of that goodness was kindness. Covenant is full of kindness. I'm fresh off of dealing a little bit with Mephibosheth in Texas recently, that message of Mephibosheth. And one of the things that David says when he asks if there's anyone left of the house of Saul that he may show them kindness, 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 for Jonathan's sake. The Hebrew translation there of kindness is covenant faithfulness. So you see God as covenantally faithful. Then you see that part of that faithfulness must be that he's patient. He has to be patient because that's part of covenant. That's the patience with people who aren't yet up to your level, and we're not up to his level, so he's extremely patient. And then kindness is the terms of the covenant being given over to us. So love is long-suffering. Love is kind. Love does not envy. God does not envy. So God is not in some perpetual fight for your attention, wishing he had more of it. That's a construct by man who doesn't quite understand the love of God. Like, oh, God wants to be number one. I hear this said a lot. I'm number two. God's number one. At best, you're number two. God's my number one. I don't think we have to put lists on it. God's in everything. He doesn't have to be listed against everything else. It's not as if he's one in everything else he thinks needs to be a distant second. He's not envious of you. He's in you, and he loves you. Love doesn't parade itself. God doesn't parade himself. He need not. He knows you have matters of great importance in your life, and that if you properly put things into its perspective, you'll see God in all of them. And then love is not puffed up or arrogant. God is not puffed up or arrogant. What does that look like to you? Again, I'm not to insert my own platitudes of what that is, but work this fourth verse today. I encourage you, make your homework to see God as love, and these are what love looks like. These things are what love looks like. Therefore, these are what God looks like. We move on to the fifth verse tomorrow. See you then. God bless.